For more talks and meditations, go to GloriaKGreen.com. So today we're going to be talking about the cozy blanket of self-compassion. And Kristen Neff says, when you make mistakes or fall short of your expectations, you can throw away that rawhide whip and instead throw a cozy blanket of compassion around your shoulders. That's not what we're trained to do. We're trained to beat ourselves up when we do something wrong. And a lot of times it's because we don't feel worthy. But if we do feel worthy, we can give ourselves the physical, mental, social, emotional, and spiritual resources that we need whenever we need them. We don't need someone else to give them to us. But when we don't believe we're worth it, we kind of run through life on low power mode, trying to do to make us worthy and running ourselves into the ground. But self-compassion can help us recharge our batteries. So by asking ourselves what we need, whether it's what do we need to feel safe in this moment? What do I need to feel seen or heard or loved or understood? When we give ourselves what we need, we become more resilient so we can cope with the challenges of life. The problem for most of us, if you're like me, is that you might not really believe you're worth it. This feeling of unworthiness comes from the way we treat ourselves. When we make a mistake, we tell ourselves, I'm a mistake. When we let others down, we tell ourselves, I'm a terrible person or I'm a selfish person. When we fail, we tell ourselves, I'm a failure or I'm so stupid. In other words, what we do is we shame ourselves because we think in shaming ourselves, we'll get better. And when we shame ourselves, the shame grows when we leave it in the dark and in silence. How many times have you done something you're not proud of and you kind of stay quiet and hope nobody notices that you did something stupid or you did something wrong? And we spend a lot of energy beating ourselves up saying, I shouldn't have done that. And it's not really the case. So we focus our energy on hiding instead of making ourselves feel better or even fixing whatever the mistake was. So the ability to feel unashamed while seeing ourselves clearly is one of the gifts of self-compassion. Kristen Neff says, the three components of self-compassion act as a direct antidote to shame. Mindfulness prevents us from over-identifying with our missteps. Common humanity counteracts the feeling of isolation from others. And kindness allows us to feel worthy despite our imperfections. This allows us to see clearly and acknowledge our areas of weakness without defining ourselves by them. The feelings of self-worth that come from achievements, looking a certain way, or winning someone's approval don't last. The self-worth is there when things are going well, but it disappears when you need it most. The worthiness that comes from self-compassion is more stable over time. You might look at self-compassion as an inner support system that provides you with resilience. You don't have to earn self-compassion. All you have to do is be a flawed human being. I think we can all say we fit in that category. Then you can ask yourself, what do I need to be safe, happy, seen, understood, loved, whatever it is? And sometimes what we need is just, it's a new word I just learned, a micro joy. And a micro joy is just the lens through which you're looking at things. So the lens through which you're looking at the sky makes it just a sky or a beautiful sky. Or the lens through which you're drinking your cup of tea or coffee could be something that you don't even recognize you're doing, you're on autopilot, or could be something you're really enjoying and giving you a moment of joy. Could be just looking at a photo of a loved one or a video of a grandchild. These moments of joy aren't going to change or cancel what's happening in the world or what's happening to you, any of the bad things that are happening in the present moment. But by allowing ourselves to experience a moment of joy, we find hope. Hope that the negative isn't going to last forever and that life can be okay. Self-compassion involves wanting health and well-being for ourselves. It's not putting our needs over the needs of others, but it is putting our needs on par with the needs of others. So we say yes when we have the energy to do whatever is asked of us. And we say no when we don't have the energy, because we have to keep track of our needs. We soothe our agitated minds with micro joys, so we're better able to notice what's right as well as what's wrong. You know, when something goes wrong, we put on our dark colored glasses and everything looks like it's a problem. But if we can stop and take a moment to look at something beautiful or something that is we can appreciate, we're not putting on rose-colored glasses, but we're taking those dark glasses off. And when we do that, we can start orienting ourselves towards the things that bring us joy. So there's three facets of self-compassion: mindfulness, self-kindness, and common humanity. And mindfulness is the idea that we need to see things as they are, no more and no less. This means we need to see that we're suffering. We often fail to recognize negative feelings like loneliness, guilt, unworthiness, or sadness as suffering. It was a couple weeks ago, I just got home from Florida and Walt had gone to bed early and I was down in the kitchen thinking, I need something. And I sat there with it for a minute and I thought, you know what, I'm feeling lonely. And I can tell you that is the first time in my life that I ever knew that I was feeling lonely. I asked Walt, he said, no, I don't think I've ever felt lonely. And it's because we don't allow ourselves to stop and think what's going on right now. So we don't feel our feelings. We don't know what's going on. So we make it less than what it is. You know, it's not loneliness. It's just I'm feeling restless. But really it is loneliness. And it's not going in the other direction and saying, oh, I don't have any friends and the whole world is going to hell. We're not doing that either. Mindfulness is no more and no less than what actually is. But we've been trained pretty much, at least I have, to deny our suffering. It's all good. Everything's okay. Someone asks you how you are and you're feeling pretty crappy, what do you say? I'm fine. We've been trained to ignore and deny our suffering. When we offer ourselves the same quality of unconditional kindness that we'd offer to a friend, we can stop denying our suffering. The fact that we're suffering doesn't make us a bad person, although we sometimes think it does. If you were better, this wouldn't bother you, or this wouldn't have happened, or whatever. Our minds tend to focus on the failure rather than the pain caused by the failure. Most people tend to go immediately into problem-solving mode. Boy, my kids, for a long time, they couldn't tell me anything that was wrong with them because I was going to jump in and fix it. And for a while, they didn't tell me anything negative because they knew that. But I'm stopping now for a breath or two and acknowledging that, you know what, they're having a hard time, but they can deal with it. I don't have to fix it. And that's what I need to do for myself, is take a breath or two, say, this sucks, but I can get through it, and provide myself with a kind, caring response. I have found putting my hand on my heart really helps. And research has found that it does help, that touch really does help calm you. You might put it on your forearm or on your shoulder. Those are other places if you're not comfortable. Other people find that's very awkward and they're never going to do it. But we want to give ourselves a kind, caring response that we feel is kind, caring, not that Gloria says is kind and caring. Because if we don't, we risk getting exhausted and overwhelmed. Because we're spending all our energy trying to fix problems without refreshing ourselves. It could be something as minor as my missing a turn when I was driving and I was running late for mindful moments. And my mind was off elsewhere because I had too much going on. And I was going down and I missed the turn onto Seagull Road from Odana. And then I kept going down on Odana and I missed the turn for Midvale. And I was running late, and it was just like when I realized where I was just like, oh no, you stupid idiot. Here you're going to teach mindfulness and you're doing something so stupid as that, you know? And why didn't you allow more time? You know what time you should leave to get there. Why did you have to do that one more thing? And I was beating myself up. And that's pretty typical reaction we have when we make just a minor mistake. But what could I have said to myself that was a little bit more self-compassionate? I could have said, Gloria, you're doing enough. You're trying to do too much. It's okay. Slow down. So what would be a more compassionate response? Gloria, you're volunteering your time. It's okay if you're a couple minutes late. No one's going to get mad at you. No one's going to think less of you. You're human. All human beings do things like that. We run on autopilot, sometimes not running the right way. We run late. We try and do too much. It doesn't make you a bad person. And then if I really wanted to be self-compassionate, I might look out the window at a tree or the sky and just savor it for a minute just to calm my body. And that's the self-compassionate response. But I can't do that if I'm not mindful enough to know that I'm suffering. If I'm just so busy focused on the next thing and the next thing and the next thing, I won't see it. So let's do a reflection. So you may want to get into a comfortable posture. You can close your eyes or not. It's up to you. And think of a recent time when things did not go the way you wanted them to. Maybe someone's actions triggered your anger or disappointment. Maybe you made a mistake. Maybe you weren't as productive as you would have liked to be. Maybe you said something unskillfully. Now stop and just notice, play the movie in your mind and notice how you felt when that happened. What did you feel in your body? And what feelings did you feel? Maybe you felt mad, frustrated, sad, disappointed. And think about whether or not you allowed yourself to feel that emotion in real time. So think about whether you allowed yourself to feel that emotion when it was actually happening. Or did you just distract yourself or move on or go into problem solving? What did you say to yourself when it was happening? Were you thinking the world was 100% bad? So, one of the enemies of mindfulness is over-identification. The world is out to get me. Everyone's going to get me. We get so carried away by our personal drama that we can't see clearly what's really happening. He's out to get me when in reality, he's not out to get me. He's having a bad day. It has nothing to do with me. So, you know, what I was saying when I missed my turn is, I am such a space cadet, I'll never be mindful. I was identifying with my mistake. I'm mindful often, not all the time, and nobody can be mindful all the time, but I do have my mindful moments. So I'm not a bad person. I'm not a bad mindfulness guide. I am a human being. And yes, I don't need to identify with a mistake that I made. You know, if I don't want to do something that someone asked me to, I'm not selfish. I just didn't have the energy to do what they wanted to do or the inclination. And it's not my job to take care of all their needs. So how we talk to ourselves is really important, and mindfulness helps us pay attention. So it's not less than and it's not more than, it's just what is. So we're accepting, we're aware of what's happening in the present moment and accepting that it's happening. And it doesn't mean that we, accepting means that while we don't like it, we're not going to force the present moment to be something other than what it actually is. Yes, we'd like to change the present moment so that we're always happy and life is wonderful, but it doesn't work that way. So when we accept it, we say, yes, this is what it is. And I guess it's using the serenity prayer to see, if I can't make a change to this, I've just got to accept this is what it is and deal with it. The foundation of self-compassion is the ability to turn mindfully toward our discomfort and acknowledge it. And I don't know if any of my sisters feel this way, but I feel like a lot of times when there was discomfort when I was growing up, it was more, okay, put that behind you and move on. Don't look at the discomfort or don't dwell on it. And so for a lot of my life, I brushed anything that was uncomfortable under the carpet and let it fester there until I couldn't ignore it anymore. So self-compassion is the ability to turn toward that discomfort and say, ooh, I don't feel good about this, but this is what's happening, and I need to see it. The second component of self-compassion is self-kindness. And that begins with stopping the self-judgment and negative stories that are on our top 10 story list. But it involves more than stopping our inner critic. It includes actively comforting ourselves, just the way we would a dear friend. So think about it. If you were in the car with me when I missed those two turns and was running late, would you have said the same thing to me that I said to myself? Probably not. You'd probably say, it's okay. Don't worry about it. Things are fine.
Would have grabbed the steering wheel.
Yeah. Okay. So what we need to do is recognize everybody has times when they blow it and treat ourselves kindly. For some of us, talking to ourselves kindly is like learning a new language. Think about that. It's like learning a new language, talking nice to ourselves. in my meditation teacher training, Tara Brach would put her hand on her heart and say, "It's okay, sweetheart." And I was just like, ew, not going there. Because it felt so phony and whatever. And now I find myself automatically putting my hand on my heart whenever I need comforting. And I actually, in the last year, have actually said, "It's okay, sweetie," to myself. And then I was just like, what? But it takes time to get familiar with talking this new language because we haven't spoken it to ourselves that way. Kristen Neff says, when we consistently give ourselves nurturance and understanding, we also come to feel worthy of care and acceptance. When we give ourselves empathy and support, we learn to trust that help is always at hand. When we wrap ourselves in the warm embrace of self-kindness, we feel safe and secure. We don't have to look outside of ourselves to feel that help is always at hand, because we can often help ourselves. We don't have to look for to others for approval. We can look inside and just approve ourselves. So when we're faced with our human flaws, we can respond with kindness and with care, or with judgment and with criticism. Responding with kindness provides us the resources needed to cope with the challenges of life. So which neural pathway do you want to strengthen? I've been asking myself that when I start beating myself up. Is that really the neural pathway you want to strengthen? Is that the habit you want to be in, beating yourself up? Or do you want to be in the habit of talking kindly to yourself? Because if I'm in the habit of beating myself up, I'm probably going to also be beating other people up. And if I'm in the habit of talking kindly to myself, I'm probably going to talk a little kinder to other people. So the third facet of self-compassion is a sense of common humanity. It acknowledges that we're all perfectly imperfect, just as we're supposed to be, perfectly imperfect. We're not the only ones who have failed. We're not the only ones who've been made a fool of. We're not the only ones who have been disappointed or rejected. And often, when we're beating ourselves up, we think the world is just against me, no one else. Or I'm the only one who was rejected by friends in grammar school. Really? But that was a thought that went through my mind for many years. So the sense of common humanity, instead of pitying ourselves, we remember that everybody suffers. I'm not the only one. And so instead of getting absorbed by my feelings of I'm not good enough, we see the bigger picture, and then more possibilities come into view. The recognition of common humanity is at the core of self-compassion. It requires that we're neither self-focused or other-focused. Instead, we use wisdom to see the larger whole and figure out what's fair, balanced, and sustainable. And so those are the three components of self-compassion, but there's two types of self-compassion. Most of us as women have been trained to do tender self-compassion. It's the soft, yielding, receptive, and nurturing kind of compassion we give to others. We don't always give it to ourselves. It's like a mother holding a crying baby. It involves being with ourselves in a comforting, soothing, and accepting way. And we know how to do that with friends, but we need to expand that and start learning how to do that with ourselves, so we can care and nurture ourselves. But we don't want to limit our compassion to being tender, because if we do, we're going to end up being a doormat, because we'll be taking care of everything for everyone because we're nurturing. That's how we were raised. So we need some fierce self-compassion as well. Fierce self-compassion is firm, forceful, commanding, goal-oriented. With fierce self-compassion, we act in the world to uphold our true selves and stand up for our rights and needs, just like a mama bear for her cubs. That's fierce self-compassion. Think of it as having a backbone with the ability to set healthy boundaries. Many of us don't have a backbone. I know most of my life I went over hunched like this, protecting my soft front because I didn't have a strong back. But as my back gets stronger and I learn to set boundaries, I can open up my front and not worry so much about being hurt or taken advantage of. When our back is strong, we don't need to harden or close down. And a lot of times I closed down because I didn't have the strong back. But if the back is strong, then we have more stability in our life. And we don't need to close down our hearts. So as we act to protect, provide for, or motivate ourselves, fierce self-compassion sometimes expresses itself as anger. And anger is not a bad thing, as long as we express it skillfully. If the fierce expression of anger is balanced with tender concern, it can be healthy and constructive force. So there's times we need more tender self-compassion and times we need more fierce self-compassion. And we always need some of both. So let's do a short meditation. On the in-breath, feel the strength in your back. Rest in the awareness of the strength, the composure, and the stability that your strong back provides in your life. On the out-breath, relax your chest to feel your soft front. You might even feel your shoulder blades rolling down your back a little as you open up your soft front. Our soft front allows us to remain open to life as it is without resisting or closing our hearts. Let's practice letting our strong backs allow us to maintain a soft front. Think of a time when you needed to get fierce with yourself or someone else. How would you express yourself with a strong back and a soft front? What words would you use? What would be your tone of voice? Notice how that might be different than the way you normally would speak. And when you're ready, slowly and gently opening your eyes. Kristen Neff says, tender self-compassion allows us to accept the discomfort of an unwanted task and to be non-judgmental about our desire to put it off. Fierce self-compassion then propels us to take action so that we do what's needed. The self-compassion at our heart is like rocket fuel for getting things done. There's a lot of people who think, well, if I'm self-compassionate, I'll let myself off the hook. And if you only have tender self-compassion, you probably will. But if you add in some fierce self-compassion, you'll get things done. So when we're self-compassionate, we acknowledge that our needs matter. We have the strength to be true to ourselves. And we trust that even when we blow it, we'll be supportive to ourselves. We don't get so upset when we get things wrong because we know this is part of being human. We're works in progress, so tender self-compassion reassures us when we don't succeed, and fierce self-compassion energizes us to try again.